welcome back to Between Two Wings. I'm your host, Emily Norman, and today we have Mark Henley with us, who is the team lead for the Aeroshells. Mark, thank you so much for joining our show today.
Thank you for having me.
So the Aeroshells are one of my favorite airshow acts, but how did it all get started?
We had a family business I stayed in for about 25 years, and then we developed, the team developed kind of in the background, and my brother and Steve Gustafson, our left wingman, they actually started this team in 1985. So this is his 36th season to fly with the team. And so this I started flying, when I was in high school and college, and then bought a T6 later on. And so I joined the team in 1997. So this is my 24th season.
So how did you start flying the T6?
I remember it was a beautiful winter day. It was a little warmer than normal, and I remember going down and trying to get my dad to, I wanted to just get him to go fly with me in the T6, because by this time I'd started flying a Stearman and had some time in it, and I don't even remember exactly what year it was, but it was anyway, but I remember him asking me, he said, well, have you read the book? It's like, well, no, I hadn't read the book. I said, he said, well, go get the manual and, take it home and study it. And then we'll get back down here in a week or so and we'll go fly. So a couple of weeks later, another beautiful day. And it's like, you know what? I want to go fly the T6. So I went down. My dad was in a little workshop working on something. And I asked him, I said, you mind if we go fly the T6? He goes, I thought he'd stop and go ride, but he goes, well, have you read the book? I said, yeah, I've read the book. He says, the guy ain't gas in it? I said, yeah, it's got gas. He said, you know how to start it? I said, oh, yeah, I can start it. He said, well, go fly the darn thing. So I drove up there and pulled it out of the hangar and went and flew it.
And, yeah, that's awesome.
It was, like I said, my first flight in a T6 was my first flight in a T6.
Definitely. And while we probably recommend that everyone does a little bit more than just read the book before they go hop in a T6, most pilots won't have the experience or opportunity to fly in a vintage Warburg at all. But what is something that all pilots could learn from, flying in a T6?
Well, the T6, during the war, it got nicknamed the pilot maker. And what it, because once you graduated from the T6, you were basically capable of flying anything that the U.S. military had single engine. I mean, that was, you went from the Navy, they went to flying Corsairs and flying Wildcats and later Hellcats. And then the Army Air Corps, they flew, P-40s, they flew P-47s, flew P-51s. And the T6 would hone those skills to a point where, like, you fly a Mustang after flying a T6 and you'll go, man, this is easy, because the T6 is kind of a little squirrely on landing, and a Mustang's got big wide gear, got good brakes, it's got good visibility. It's actually, most people say that they should have reversed it. You ought to learn to fly the Mustang before you learn to fly the T6.
Yeah, there you go. And I know the planes you guys are using, the basic airframe, the engine, everything's essentially the same. But if we did send those planes back in time to when they were, fresh off the manufacturing line, what would these pilots be surprised to find? What are some of the upgrades you guys have done?
Well, obviously, in the electronic era, we've got nice GPSs and autopilots, and we get weather and we get the traffic and which displays not only on the L3, but also shows on our Aspens. And, we've got JPI engine analyzers. I mean, they would be amazed because back in the day, you didn't have, the only thing you had engine analyzers and oil temp, oil pressure, and cylinder temp. And, here we got fuel flow. We have, for example, if we foul, I fouled a spark plug coming home from the last air show. And about halfway home, the engine kind of started running a little bit rough. So I reached over there and checked the mag. And when I got to the left mag, I had a number four, the EGT temp just fell off. And so that tells me I got a cold cylinder. It was number four. And being the left mag, I know it's a rear. So, when I got home, I dropped the cowl, popped number four in, put a new plug in, cranked up, ran perfect. And they wouldn't have been able to do that quick during the war. They would probably end up pulling them all and just changing them all.
Yeah, that would definitely be a huge surprise. I can only imagine. So I know on your plane, you have something very special written on the front, Miss Tanner. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had a friend of mine that bought one 3 or 4 years before, and he paid $25,000 and flew it home. And I started looking, and by this time in 88, they had almost doubled in value. I mean, if you went on any of the, like Mark Clark, courtesy aircraft, they've been a Warbird dealer for years and years, and send out a newsletter. Well, they had about 10 T6s, and there wasn't one in there for less than $50,000. And I was getting to the point where, man, if I don't jump in right now, I'm not ever going to be able to afford one. And so,
yeah, because nowadays they're even more than that. Oh, yeah.
You, yeah, they're over $200,000 for a nice,
yeah,
for a nice
it's
one.
It's incredible.
So anyway, I started looking for a T6. So I finally found one over at an airport over in Mississippi. And so I went and looked at it, and I negotiated with the owner. And next thing I know, I bring this airplane home. Well, that's about when I finally decided to tell my wife that I was going to buy an airplane. And so, man, I got read the Riot Act. It's like, what are you doing? See, we had my first child was born about a month before. And so my wife started reading me the Riot Act about how I need to be putting money away for college and all this stuff. And that's like, I tried to tell us, look, this airplane in 3 years has doubled in value. I mean, I could have bought one 3 years ago for 25. Now they're 50. I said, they're going to go up in value a whole lot faster than if I put the money in a savings account or something. And I said, look, if it comes to it, I said, if we ever have a problem paying for college, I'll just sell the airplane and pay for college. I mean, it's certainly more than what a college education would have cost. And so anyway, so my daughter, she finally graduated from pharmacy school here several years back. And I just kind of made a smart remark. So I guess that means I get to keep my airplane. So she's educated now.
Exactly. And you get to continue to entertain all of us at air shows year round. And so you are the team lead of your airbag team. What are some of the challenges or, you know, responsibilities you have as in that role?
Well, you know, my background with the team is I flew right wing for 12 years. Yeah. And I really enjoyed flying wing because flying wing is certainly very, very physically challenging. I mean, my job was to keep my airplane in the same spot relative to the lead, regardless of what he tried to do. But then after 12 years, we had some personnel change. And so it was decided that maybe we needed, you know, somebody with a little more experience to fly lead. And so I moved into the lead position. And there it's totally different. I mean, as far as the formation is concerned, that's their job. I mean, that's Jimmy and Steve and Brian, their job is to fly on me. And then my job is to adjust the whole formation to the show site, whether it's wind, it's temperature, it's clouds, whatever it is, I have to adjust to make it fit the box. And so everybody else, they fly their spot and they do a very good job of it, but I'm the one that has to adjust the turns and stuff to keep it in the box. And I didn't realize that it was that much to it until I started flying regular. My brother flew lead for 24 years and, I was flying wing, he was flying lead, didn't think a whole lot about it until all of a sudden I get pushed up front and next thing you know, it's like, damn, you know, that was a lot more to it than what you think.
Exactly. So obviously when you're doing these air shows, you have the communication in the air, but then you have to have good communication as a team and just, you know, that great working dynamic to be able to do like a choreographed show just like this. So tell us a little bit about the dynamic you guys have as a team, you know, on the ground.
The team, first off, there's been a lot of teams out there come and go. Mm-hmm. 90% of the ones that have been here that are not here today did not survive, not because they weren't talented. I mean, there've been teams with a lot of talented people, but you got to be, to make it simple, you got to be friends with them. You got to be able to get along. You know, if you've got people with, you know, big egos and stuff, you know, or A-type personalities, most of the time those people don't make it very long in a team environment. You know, we just, all four of us, and all the ones we've had on the team even before the four that are here now, that's one of the key things before we recruit anybody. We make sure it's somebody that we like and we get along with, because, you know, when you do 20 some odd shows a year and you're, you know, gone from Thursday through Sunday or Monday and do that, especially during the summertime, it's almost every weekend, you know, you got to be able to get along. And that's a key thing for the longevity of a team.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, Mark, I really want to say thank you so much for coming on our show today. And everyone, next time you're on Air Show and the Aero Shells are there, do not miss their act. It is, like I said, one of my favorites. You'll be able to hear it. You'll be able to see it all the time. It's absolutely amazing. But once again, thank you, Mark, so much.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of Between Two Wings. We'll see you next time.